Let's start. So if you remember what we have been discussing in the last class is the non-idealities that you see in a bipolar junction transistor. Okay? And so we will continue on that. And what you will see is that some of the things we will talk about, it actually deals with high-level injection, something that we have avoided discussing all throughout this course. So we lack the technical skills to deal with high-level injection because, as I said, that takes almost a new course. Okay, so what we will do is we will mostly talk about the high-level injection issues in a qualitative manner. We will not get into the very details of it. Okay? So let's look at the topics. So the first of all, we are going to talk about beta fall off, okay, at high and low levels of IC. So what that means is when your collector current is very low or the collector current is very high, okay, the gain parameter beta actually falls off. We will talk about why that happens. So in that context, we'll talk about these high-level injection issues, and we will also talk about something that is just geometric. It's called current crowding. So we will see what that means. The next thing that we will talk about is the transit time, okay, in the bipolar junction transistor. So the question is, how much time does it take for an electron to go from one side to the other? And again, if you go back to the basics, you know that BJT is nothing but two PN junctions diode connected one behind the other, right? So the transit time is completely determined by the transit time in the BJT itself. Okay, and you know something about that. If you remember, we talked about this storage time. If you are working in the forward bias of a PN junction diode, okay, you create these excess carriers that goes in. But if you immediately take off the voltage, the charge that you injected does not go away immediately. It takes some time for that charge to go away. And that is the time it takes for the charge to go away is something we call the storage time. Okay? So we will see how that storage time actually affects how quick or how fast your transistor will work. And in that context, we will talk about some engineering people do at the base of the transistor to make the transistor faster. Okay? We will also talk about something called Kirk effect, which is again an effect which comes when there is high level injection. So very high levels of current. Okay? But we should know about these things. And so we will discuss what that is. Next, we will come to small signal model. We will see how the small signal model of a bipolar junction transistor looks like. Those of you who are taking 105 or have taken 105, you obviously know all about it. But for those of you who have not seen this, this is something that you need if you are trying to do a circuit analysis using this bipolar junction transistor. Okay. The last topic is charge control model. This charge control model actually shows us how the transistor works in large signals. Okay, so the difference between a small signal and large signal is that when we work in usual AC regime, you usually have a big bias voltage, let's say 5 volt. On top of it, you have maybe 700, 500, 600 millivolt of AC swing. So the AC swing is much lower than the DC bias. Okay, that's the small signal regime. But your AC swing could also be, let's say, 5 volt. What happens then for the for the charge storage and other times. That's something we will talk about here in the large signal model, and that will end our discussion on bipolar junction transistors. So we will move on to MOSFETs, which actually almost consists of 40% to 35% of the core syllabus, right? Okay. Because that's the most used IC device today. 10, 15 years ago, it won't be. Bipolar junction transistors will be the main thing. All right, so let's start with the gain falloff. So this is, again, is a real data taken from a bipolar junction transistor. You are measuring the beta, which is IC over IV. You are changing, you are plotting this as a function of the collector current. What you see is it is mostly flat here, but then it falls off at low IC and high IC. Okay? So the question is why? Why would that happen? And to understand this, let's look at the collector current as a function of base to emitter voltage. Okay? So in this plot, we are assuming that your VCE, collector to emitter voltage, is high enough that you have reached the forward active region. Okay? All right. So now, if you look at this, this is a semi-log plot. This is logarithmic, this is linear. So if you have a function which is exponential, in the semi-log plot, it should look like a straight line. So that's why you are seeing that IC is a straight line with VBE. If you remember, IC actually is an exponential function. I'm plotting it in the semi-log plot, so it is linear. Okay? So, by the way, if I did not mention it, this kind of plot, when you plot beta with IC, this is usually known as the Gummel plot. So, again, if you are using a BJT, people will often ask, give me your Gummel plot, because I want to know which range of IC I'm using so that I know the beta is constant. Okay. Now, coming back to here, if you look at now this IC and IB, if you plot the IB here also with VBE, what you see that in this regime, IC and IB are parallel. So if I now divide IC by IB, which gives me my beta, of course, in this regime, this is going to be a constant flat value. Okay? But when VBE is small, you see that beta, this IB, is no longer following this line. It is actually going up like this. Right? So if it was following that line, then I should have seen something like this. Okay? But I am seeing a little bit of more current for some reason. So we can say that at very small voltage, base to emitter voltage, we have an excess base current flowing here. Okay. So therefore, if you now look at it, if I take the division of IC by IB here, that division will give me a smaller number than here. So basically, your beta is falling off here because your IB is more than what you would expect from an exponential dependence. Similarly, if you look at the high current regimes, you see that IC is no longer following the straight line. Rather, IC is falling down, right? So you are getting less IC than what you would have expected from an ideal diode behavior. And this falling off of IC obviously translates into a lower beta. Okay. So you are seeing beta going down in two regimes, at high IC, low IC. In the low IC regime, beta is going down because your base current is going up. IC is fine, but base current is going up. At the high collector current regime, the beta is falling down because your IC is falling down. Okay? So now let's look at the reasons why this happens. So let's first look at this guy, where beta is going up. Beta is going down, your IB is going up. Okay? Now, if you remember, in a PN junction, we always assume that your depletion region is completely pure. There is no recombination generation happening. Okay? However, we mentioned that nothing is really completely pure, right? You do have some impurities always. So you will always have some recombination generation current flowing in the junction. When you have a lot of IB, the recombination generation current is so small that you don't have to worry about it. But if your IB is very small, then obviously the recombination generation current shows up. So the IB would have gone down like this, but you basically have some current here, like a floor current, which is always flowing because of recombination generation at the junction. So due to that leakage current, you see a floor current flowing always, right? Even if you try to put down VB to very small values, that leakage current flows because you have defects in the junction. Does that make any sense? So you will see, if you read different books, you will often see that people call this SCR current, right? SCR current is basically says space charge region recombination current. So depletion region is often called the space charge region, right? That's something we know. Okay. Now question is, so we understand what happens here. We have seen this when we were discussing PN junction diodes. But this is something that needs some discussion. Why does IC fall down at very large VBEs? And I'm listing three different reasons. One is high level injection, two is current crowding, three is the series resistance, none of which we have discussed before. So let's look at it one by one. Okay. So let's just remember that in principle, IC is given by right? Remember the Ebers-Mohl equation? IR is some IR naught e raised to q VBC over KT minus 1. This junction is reverse biased. Okay? So basically this factor is almost zero. This thing is almost zero. So I can write it as IR naught. Okay. So IC is alpha F e raised to VEB over KT minus 1 plus IR naught. So if VAB, actually, I'm missing a Q here. So if VEB is much, much larger than KT over Q, so if my VEB is much, much larger than 26 millivolt, I can ignore this minus 1 and IR naught because this is an exponential factor, right? So I can write it as alpha F e to the power Q VEB over KT. So all that I'm saying is if your forward bias is strong enough, you can ignore the other terms, because forward bias cut, that exponential term is so much bigger than the others. Will you agree with that? Okay. So this means that if I am drawing IC with VEB, let's say I am drawing log of IC, I should have seen a straight line. Okay? All right. Now, let's think about a situation where your forward bias is so high. So let's say this is P, this is N. This is the depletion region. I'm not doing a good job of drawing it, but use your imagination, right? So as the depletion region, I have the PN junction. And let's say I am injecting holes here. It's going down, you know, it's diffusing. But let's say that I inject so much holes that I break the low level injection condition. You see, we always work in the low level injection approximation, that your injected carriers is much smaller than your doping concentration. But let's say that I break that and I inject so much holes that my dopant concentration is not good enough to support it, right? So then obviously, again, as I said, that we don't know exactly how to formally tackle this, but we have some ideas. So if you remember that if I call these, if I define these numbers, then n prime p prime is given by ni square e raised to q vd over kt, where vd is the applied bias. So the way you find that out is you say that I have two quasi-Fermi levels, okay, and the quasi-Fermi levels are constant through the depletion region. You find this out. So from here, if you remember, we found out the excess carrier concentration at the edge of the depletion region. So for usual diodes at low level injection, we will do exactly this. We will say N prime is Ni square over P prime, let's say, e raised to QVD over KT. And therefore, P prime is just equivalent to the number of dopants, so this becomes Ni square over N sub A e raised to QVD over KT, and we called this the law of the junction, right? Okay, but now you see that in this case, what's happening is the number of excess carriers that I have put in is actually larger than the dopant concentration, so I cannot use this. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that charge neutrality is still valid. That allows me to write that delta N is equal to delta P. Okay? All right. So, delta N is much larger than N naught. Delta P is much larger than P naught. Therefore, although N naught and P naught are not equal, I can write that N prime is equal to P prime. Does that make any sense? You see that I am equating this with this. Delta N is equal to delta P. N naught and P naught are not equal. But N naught and P naught are so small compared to delta N and delta P, I can ignore them and I can write it as N prime is equal to P prime. So that then lets me write from this equation, if I put it here, that P prime square is Ni square e raised to QV over KT, which means P prime is Ni e raised to QV over KT to KT. Note the 2. Okay? So now you see that what's happening is your excess carrier concentration becomes a function of QV over 2KT rather than QV over KT. So then if you try to find out the current from here, the current will be proportional to e raised to QV over 2KT. That means that here the slope will change into QV over 2KT rather than QV over KT. Okay? You had a question. Yes. Right. So you will basically see a different slope. I'm saying that let's say up to this point, it was QV over KT. After that, it becomes QV over 2KT. So it goes like that. The slope changes. And this slope is less steep. So you are now getting less current. Right. So the thing is, let me make sure that I understand your question. What you are saying is, between here and here, this is not just two straight line slopes. There is actually a smooth curve here. Is that what you are asking? Here. This one. Yeah, so this has three other components in it, right? So this is one component. This is the one thing. The other thing is this, that this does not, as you can imagine, does not suddenly start to happen, right? It slowly starts to happen. So between QV over KT to QV over 2KT, obviously, you will go through a slow transition. But this just is showing you that at the final stage, you are going to get a QV over 2KT. So this is one of the reasons that your IC, the current plot, will basically start to slow down, right? Your increase in IC current will go down. So this is one of the reasons. And again, you know, this is a very qualitative description because we don't know how to deal with high-level injection formally. Okay? But physically, does it make sense? All right. Okay. The second thing is current crowding. It is very much a technological issue and a geometric issue rather than any real physics-based issue. Okay? So if you look at a transistor, right, this particular one is showing a PNP transistor. The way you make it is you have a P-type semiconductor, then you dope certain region to be N, then you dope certain region to P+. And the way you are connecting is this is your emitter, this is your collector, this is your base, this is your collector, right? So if you look at it, you know, there is no way you can make the emitter region, the area, the same as the collector region area, right? Because if you make these of the same size, how would you connect them? You will completely cover the base region. So the emitter region has a much smaller area compared to the base collector region, this junction. So if you have a certain current density flow, certain current flowing through your transistor, let's say this is a current flowing, the current density is much higher here than there. Okay? So therefore, what happens is when you go to very high current levels, this is where you start to drop a lot of voltage. Because here you have a lot of current flowing in a smaller area. Do you see that or not? If you just think about a wire, just a simple wire, if you reduce the cross-sectional area, your resistance goes up. Right? So here what's happening is, in the emitter base junction, you have a smaller cross-sectional area. So your resistance is going up, and the resistance becomes more and more important when you have a lot of current, because voltage drop is resistance multiplied by current. So if your current is very high, the voltage drop at that resistance becomes actually very high. Remember, in the ideal discussion of PN junctions, we never worried about this resistance voltage drop because it is so small. We say that if you put VD from outside, the whole VD drops across the diode. Actually, you will drop something in the resistances, but that is usually very small. When you go to very high current levels, that resistance can drop significant amount of voltage, and therefore you will see, so basically what is happening is you are putting, let's say, 5 volt at VBE, but at that point you are dropping 0.5 volt here, so you are only getting 4.5 volt across that junction, so therefore your current is no longer increasing as much as you would have expected. So that is another reason why current starts to fall off. Does that make sense? So people do something to remedy that effect. So if you look at this, just imagine this guy. This is something you are seeing from the side. So imagine this, that you are seeing from the top. If you are looking from the top, you will see something like this, right? This is the emitter junction, and this is the base junction. Right? If you see from the top. So what people do is they basically make a comb-like structure like this. So you will basically entangle many emitters with many bases. In that way, what you have done is you have effectively increased the area of the emitter base junction. You see, there are now many electrodes, and you have increased the effective area of the emitter base junction, and therefore, in total, you can gain back some of that voltage drop issue because the effective area has gone up. So you see that this is more like a geometric problem, but people figure out different engineering solutions to it. So this is one of those. The last one, which is the series resistance, in some sense, current crowding is also some kind of resistance issue. This one is simply this. You know, what happens in these areas? How does the current flow here and here? You see that when we talked about PN junction diode, we only said, okay, the carriers are diffusing out. But then you actually did a problem, which actually, I think, a homework problem which caused some confusion, that what are the majority carrier concentrations in that quasi-neutral region also. So if you look at it, and then you can see that if I have a PN junction like this, this is the depletion region. So we always put the full voltage between here and here. But actually, the current is flowing through all of this, right? And if I just had a sample of silicon sitting somewhere, no PN junction, you know, you have done homework problems to find out its resistivity. What is its resistance? So obviously, these regions have certain resistance to itself, right? So if current is flowing through this quasi-neutral region, it is going through these resistances, so you actually have an IR drop here. And again, when you go to very high current levels, that IR drop is good enough that if you put, let's say, 5 volt here, your depletion region probably only gets 4 volt. The other 1 volt drops here. And because of that series resistance, you do not get the supply voltage directly across your depletion region, which again means that the IC current that you are interested in is not going up as much as you wanted it to. Okay, so we now have gone through these three reasons why you should see a IC fall off, right? One is the series resistance like this. The other one is a current crowding, which is a geometric effect. And number three, which is a high level injection effect for which your current becomes proportional to e raised to QV over 2KT rather than QV over KT. So does that make sense? Okay, so the next thing that we will talk about is charge storage, but we probably now know why beta should fall down at very low and very high current levels. Question is, why go through all this? Why know all this? What can you do with this information? So let me specify my question. Let's say that I give you a Gummel plot. Let's say we make a bipolar junction transistor in the nano lab. We can do that in principle. And let's say I get this, and I ask you that I want this thing to be extended more. I want this to be extended more to even more high current levels. What would you do? What is the first thing that comes to mind? You want to answer? Do you want to try? Make which region shorter? Emitter region. So that will take care of the IR drop, you think? Yes, that's a good answer. But if you do make it shorter, your beta is also a function of width of the emitter, right? So your beta may still go down. I mean, you have to see how much it will go down, but that's a good answer. What is another answer? What can you do?
The easiest way is just to connect parallel pins of bipolar junctions, so the whole curve should...
That's not a device solution. That's a circuit solution. And the reason that device solutions are usually more efficient is that it saves you a lot of money. If you want to put 10 different diodes in parallel, that means that your cost will go up by 10 times. We are looking at devices, so let's figure out a device solution. Tell me your name. Nick. Okay, so Nick said that reduce the WE. What else? That is a more lower hanging fruit that you can do. So area is, okay, let me come back to you. Area is a good answer because, yes, if you increase the cross-sectional area, your resistance will go down. And that will save it. But let's say that I have just $100 to bet on many different options. So I have the width, I have the area. Mahmoud, you wanted to say something. So that was the answer I was looking for, because again, if you have $100, you want to spend it on that idea. Why? Because you are working on an exponential factor. The series resistance drops will be just a linear factor, right? V minus IR. This guy is going to be almost like exponential, because you'll reduce the position at which the high-level injection happens. But all these are actually good answers, and in practice, all these three solutions are used. So people try to make the emitter area different. People try to make the emitter area as small as possible without giving up the beta, and people try to make increase the doping as much as possible so that this is extended. Okay? All right, so next topic is charge storage. And again, this is just a slide that I copied from one of the previous lectures, right? You know about it. So basically, the idea is that if you have a PN junction, you inject these excess carriers. These excess carriers, if you just turn off your voltage, they cannot go away immediately. It takes some time for them to go away, and the time it takes for them to go away is called the storage time. And so you can write a very simple equation which looks like I equals to Q over that storage time. It gives you the storage time. How do you know about it? You basically look at, you take a PN junction, you put a pulse, you look at how much current flows after the pulse was off. From that time, you can figure out this storage time. So now, the question is, how does this affect a bipolar junction transistor? So if you think about it, in a bipolar junction transistor, this is the region base where you are basically injecting lots of carriers. So if you turn off the transistor, or more practically, if you change the voltage polarity, what are you doing with AC voltages? You are changing voltage polarity very fast. If you increase frequency, the change in the polarity is happening even faster, right? So what you want is this guy to go away and build up again for a different voltage. So the question is, what will be the storage time for this? So we know that tau is Q over I. The current flowing is a collector current, because these are the injected electrons are going into the collector base, the collector junction, and going away. So we know the collector current, which is given by this. Very nice equation. So what will be the storage time? Can you find out? I think the answer is this time not written in the slides. So what will be the storage time? Okay, let me first ask what will be the Q? one half, I had something, then base width, WB, then? Then the height of the triangle, so n prime. Then, is this all? Q, okay, that's easy. And then? Area, right. Remember, n prime is per centimeter cube. You have multiplied by the width. So you still need a centimeter square to come from somewhere, which must be the cross-sectional area. So you multiply by that. This is what you get. So now you have your expression for Q. You have the expression for IC, this one. So can you write down the storage time? With some approximations, of course. So I'll give you how much. Let's see. 4 minutes to try it. And the hint is, try to reduce the collector current in the way we reduce the Ebers, you know, the collector current just a few slides ago from Ebers-Mohl equation. I mean, Ebers-Mohl equation is right. Written right here. How would you approximate it to be simple enough that you can solve it? So it's important to understand how you make these approximations, right? Because this is one of the things that you know, that is important about this course. You kind of start learning what kind of approximations you can make, because you cannot work with this kind of expressions all the time. Any answer yet? So the second term in the collector current, can I completely ignore it? So the 4 minutes is over. So you see that this guy, I can write to be zero, right? Because it's a forward active diode. So this guy is reverse biased. This goes to zero. So you are left with a bunch of constants here, but you are comparing this with a forward bias junction here, which has an exponential factor. So when I'm making approximation, I'm within my rights to completely ignore this part, right? So I can just work with this part. Okay, so if I work with that part, and I say that I'm working with a short base, W over LB is small, then this thing becomes W over LB. Sine H, W over LB is just W over LB. Okay? So then let's look at this guy. DB over LB, PB naught is, let's skip that. I have LB over W. PB naught is what? Ni square over NB. Then I have this factor, e raised to qv eb over kt minus 1. Lb and lb goes out. So I get dv over wb. And then compare this with that. This is nothing but n prime 0. So what I get is tau is q over ic. So approximately this becomes half wb n prime 0 qa divided by, I have the qa here, qa db over wb n prime 0. This gets cancelled out. What I get is WB square over 2DB. Simple answer, right? And this, you see that with DB, you don't have too much control. But with this one, you do. So again, you reduce the base width. Your speed of the transistor goes up not linearly, but in a quadratic fashion. And, you know, one of you came to my office hours and said that, why do we do so many derivations in this course? And also in the homeworks, it's mostly because of this. You need to be able to make some approximations. Otherwise, if you just sit down with a bipolar junction transistor and try to design it in the way you want it to perform, you cannot just run numerical simulations and do it. You have to have some intuition for it. And you kind of need to know which things are important and which things are not. So that's what the derivations are designed to give you. So this one, for example, if I told you that how do I make transistors faster, we need to reduce the base width. Yeah, it's very intuitive. You reduce the base width, electrons go faster, right? It can go from one side to the other side faster, but how fast? It changes quadratically. I did not say that correctly, but you know what I mean. And that in a device design is very important, right? Because if you change it by 2 times, you get a 4 times change in the speed, which is pretty important. If you look at the industry, people will basically kill for 10% increase in on current. Not 10 times, 10%. If you have a solution that increases current by 10%, you will make hundreds of millions of dollars. So that's the thing. So for those kind of reasons, you need to kind of understand that in the device physics, which parts are of very much importance and which parts are not. Okay? All right. So let's look at a base transit time. So let's say that The WB is around 70 nanometer. DB is 10 centimeter square per second. What is the transit time, tau B? What we have seen is this is WB square over 2 dB. So this comes to be what? 70 into 10 to the power minus 7 centimeter square divided by 10. So 4900 10 raised to minus 14 divided by 10, 4.9. So let's just do this. 245 into 10 to the power minus 14 second, which gives me 2.45 picosecond. So basically, you see that your base transit time is 2.45 picosecond, which is very fast. However, it is not fast enough. What is the gate delay in a modern day MOSFET? Who knows? Does anybody know? 0.1 picosecond. Okay? So this is absolutely fast. Still, modern day MOSFETs, which are actually supposed to be slower than BJTs, is even faster than this, which means that the really well designed BJTs faster much more, are much more faster than this. Okay, so now question is, we have talked about the base storage time and we have talked about how that affects the speed of your transistor. What can you do about it? Can you design the transistor in a different manner so that you can kind of take care of it, you can make the transistor faster? And so this is something that people do. In fact, this is something that if you look at high-speed transistors, all high-speed transistors are made like this. Okay, like what? So if you draw the equilibrium energy band diagram, remember, a usual transistor will be like that, right? In this case, there is a slant here. And the slant in the conduction band means, in the energy band diagram means what? Electric field, right? So there is a built-in electric field in the base in the direction where the electrons will flow. Okay, so what happens is you inject electrons from emitter to the base. Now they would have diffused out, and the diffusion gives you the storage time. But now there is a built-in electric field which helps the electrons to go out also. Okay? Very interesting to look that, you know, understand that the way this is designed, usually in a PN junction, the built-in electric field happens in the opposite direction of the diffusion. Here, the built-in electric field is in the same direction of diffusion. It is helping the diffusion to happen. So if you put an electron here, this guy, just because of the electric field, it gets a push to get out of the collector, and it also has the diffusion. So both are working, and in this way, you can reduce the storage time significantly. So there are two ways to do it. One is you just change the doping from here to here. You see, if you look at the equilibrium band alignment, all that is happening is the Fermi level, here it was more P, here it is less P. So you are just doping it differently. That's possible. The other thing is that you use a different band gap material altogether. So we talked about silicon germanium, right? So silicon germanium, if you change the amount of silicon and germanium, you can change the amount of band gap. So we said that when you use 20%, of germanium, you have 0.1 electron volt of band gap narrowing. So if you change the grading of the alloy from this side to that side, the band gap changes. And if the band gap changes, then you get already a conduction band offset like this, right? Something like this, which throws the electron out. So for transistors, this is now a common practice. It is always done. And the fastest transistors are made of 3-5 materials, okay, where you can basically put many different materials and change the stoichiometry to give you a very sharp slant in the conduction band, which gives you a very high electric field. And people have actually shown bipolar junction transistors working at terahertz speeds, not even 100 gigahertz, right, at terahertz. So it's very nice from that point of view. But this is an engineering solution that you can do. Yes. In this case, yes, because the band offset in between silicon and silicon germanium comes in the conduction band. Valence band remains the same. But if you use different materials, you can get different things. In this case, if the material is the same, but you are changing doping, so everything changes. So this is all silicon. This is silicon, silicon, germanium, silicon. Maybe I should write it down. So that silicon, 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 germanium, silicon. Good question. All right. Any question on this? Okay. So now we are going to talk about another high-level injection effect. It's kind of very interesting. But again, it is going to be a qualitative description. So what this is showing is tau f. This tau f is not only the base transit time, it is the total transit time from emitter to collector. So it has the base transit time inside it. So it's showing tau as a function of collector current density. So obviously, as a function of collector current density, there is no reason for the transit time to change. But if you go to very high current densities, you see that the transistor is actually becoming slower. Tau f is going up. So it's very counterintuitive. Why does this happen? And it happens due to an effect often called the Kirk effect. It's very interesting. So let's look at what happens. All right. So let's say these are the equations that are in the book. So I wrote it like this, but I'll make some modifications in this so that things are understandable. Let's say I'm looking at the collector current and I have very high electric field. Okay, so the electric field is so high that the velocity of your electrons have saturated. So they are going at saturated velocities. So I can write the current as the area charge, whatever electron that I brought in, and the saturation velocity. Okay. The change that I'm going to make is I'm going to call this a delta N, because this is not all the electrons in your N-type material. Remember, N-type, P-type always have some carriers, but currents do not flow for this. Currents flow for whatever you have brought in from the outside. So this delta N has come from your base, and they are going out very fast. Okay. So let me just put delta N here. When we work within the low-level injection approximation, the delta N is much smaller than the doping density, right? Okay. So if I want to write down the charge density equation, which is QNC minus Q delta N, I can completely ignore this. So 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 therefore, when we actually solve for PN junctions and everything else, we never even have written this. We have only written Q and C. Right? You see that when, if this is P, this is N, when you draw your charge density, you just draw this to be like this and this to be like this, saying that, oh, this is just Q and D. But actually, because when you put a bias, P is putting holes here, and for that, you are going to see something here. This will go down a little bit because you are putting holes into the system. And we never worry about that because the injected carriers are so much smaller compared to the density. In this case, of course, if the low-level injection is no longer valid, you have to worry about this Q delta N. Now think about it. When you are actually in a very high injection level case, your Q delta N can be actually much larger than Q and C. What that says is your charge density can actually change sign, which is kind of very strange. But if you now look at the electric field profile, electric field is an integration of charge density. So if your charge density changes sign, the electric field also changes sign. So let's keep that in mind and see what happens. So in a low-level injection case, this is how the electric field looks like, right? So for simplicity, the depletion region in the base is not shown. But this is what we are all familiar with, that this is how it looks like. But when you actually have a significant Q delta N, the charge density has gone down, so electric field has also gone down. It starts to look like that. When the switch has happened, so actually this guy, this thing, overcomes that, the electric field profile completely changes. Okay, so it has switched. Now, one thing you should remember, that area under all these curves are exactly the same. Because these are electric field profiles, and integration of electric field, so area under the curve is the voltage at this junction. So if you are not changing the voltage at that junction, if your VBC is fixed, then this is fixed. You are just changing VBE and changing collector current. So what can happen now is that, you have switched it. You can now go in the other direction. So you see that now this much is the base width. So physical base width was like this. But because of this effect, even inside the collector, your electron has to cross this length. If you increase the current even more, now it has to cross that length, which is even higher. So in some sense, what is happening is because of you are pushing so much current into the system, your effective base width is actually increasing, which is opposite of the early effect. In the early effect, you change the base collector voltage, and then effective base width goes down. Here, your base collector voltage is fixed, but you are increasing current by changing VBE, and your effective base width is going up. If your effective base width goes up, your transistor becomes slower, right? Because the length has gone up, and the tau B, as you have seen, is proportional to WB square. So if you change the base width a little bit, the tau B goes up. And so that's what you see. And that's why you see this kind of behavior. So this is something, again, the usual understanding is if I get more current, the transistor must be faster. Okay? But if you start getting more and more DC current through the transistor, at some point, high-level injection will come in, and then the transistor will actually become slower. Any question on that? This looks fine. Okay, the small signal model. How many of you have seen this before? Okay, at least 50% have not seen. So hopefully, I will only bore 50% of the class, which is not so bad. So the thing is, again, small signal model we want to know because this is a model that you will use for any kind of circuit analysis. And if you are a mathematician, then all you are doing in a small signal model is you are linearizing your device. So remember, a PN junction diode or a bipolar junction transistor, the current voltage equations are heavily nonlinear. It's exponential. But when you do a circuit analysis, you want to do a linear circuit analysis. Everything is linear. So what you do is you fix your bias point, DC bias point, and just put a small AC and see how the circuit elements will look like. So that's the idea. And this is important because most of our AC applications are like that. We put a small AC on a big DC. So all that you need to know is how the circuit will behave as a response to that small AC. Okay? So what we are going to show is that the circuit model for a bipolar junction transistor looks like this, small circuit model, small signal circuit model. All right. So the first thing that we ask is, this is IC, we know, right? Approximated version of IC. So what is the change in IC if I change the VBE by a little bit? That's what we want to know. Now, the thing is, if I change IC a little bit, I can call that my AC signal. So let me call that small IC. Let me call this small VBE. So when I'm writing it with small letters, that means that these are AC quantities. So this is something, delta IC over delta VBE. This is something that is called the transconductance GM. Again, why it is called a transconductance? Because you are looking at a current in this terminal as a function of a voltage in a different terminal. So it is not a simple conductance. It is a transfer of conductance. It's a transconductance. So you look at that. If I take derivative of this, what I get is alpha F IF naught e raised to QVBE over KT, 1 over KT by Q. So this thing is just IC. So you can write this one as IC over KT over Q. So what this is saying is, your transconductance is a function of your DC bias. If you fix your DC bias to give you a DC current of IC, then GM will be linearly proportional to that. Okay? What this is also telling me is IC, just by definition, is GM VBE. Where GM is IC over KT over Q. So, if I look at current flowing from collector to emitter, which is my collector current, I will just draw a current source, dependent current source, which goes at GM VBE. That's all. And the value of GM is given by IC over KT over Q. Okay? So we now know about IC. All that we need to know is IB, because IE will be just IC plus IB. Okay? So again, what we are going to do is we are going to find out IB as a function of VBE. This is what we want to find out. Now, what you see that IB is nothing but IC over beta. Okay? So, if I wanted to know delta IB over delta VBE, again, I'm writing the SE quantities. I can just write it as 1 over beta IC over VBE. And IC over VBE is nothing but GM. So this is what I get. On the other hand, if you look at this, delta IB over delta VBE, IB current is flowing in the base emitter terminal. So this is just a usual conductance, not a transconductance. So let me call that 1 over some resistance, which is R pi. So from here, you can write that R pi is beta over GM. So again, at your DC bias point, if you know your collector current and if you know your beta, you know the resistance that you see. And this resistance is between these base and emitter terminals. Okay? So you see that, you know, again, it is important to understand the bigger picture what we are doing. Our input signal is VBE. We are changing the VBE little bit and seeing how the parameters of the circuit changes with it. We first looked at the IC. Now we looked at IB. And IE is just IB plus IC, so we don't care. Okay? So we found out that there is a resistance R pi and there is a GM VBE between these two terminals. So the last thing that we know, we need to find out, is how does the charge changes as a function of VBE. So let me use the same notation. So delta. What is Q of, the reason that we want to look at is that we know that there is a storage time, right? So whenever there is a time dependent effect, I need to take care of it in an AC circuit. So what is Q over V? It's some kind of capacitance, right? So let me call that C pi. So one of that capacitance will be my depletion capacitance, right? Because I have a depletion region, even in the forward bias. So I have a depletion capacitance plus I have the storage charge, and a storage charge is given by IC tau. Remember that Q storage is tau storage is Q storage over IC. So IC tau delta IC tau over delta VBE. So C depletion region plus tau. And what is delta IC over delta VBE? It's just GM. So basically, I have two different capacitances. One is the depletion capacitance. The other is storage time multiplied by your transconductance. And this is something you can call a diffusion capacitance, because the change of the storage charge is coming because there was a diffusion of charges. So this is C diffusion. There is another way you can remember the difference. Depletion capacitance comes because you are changing the amount of immobile charges, fixed ions. Diffusion capacitance is there because you are changing the amount of mobile charges. So there are these two different things. So you can then combine them together in the parameter C pi, and you can put it here. So you see this kind of a circuit diagram where you have a GM VBE, you have R pi, and you have a capacitance C pi. Okay. Okay, So you can do, you know, basically, if you look at the circuit diagram, all that you need to know is beta, GM, and tau. If you know all this, you can figure out the whole circuit model, right? So let's look at a simple example. Let's say that you are given a DC biasing condition of a BJT where your collector current is 1 milliampere, your VC is 3 volt, beta is 90, tau is 5 picosecond. So you want to figure out the small signal circuit parameters. So you need to figure out this GM, you need to figure out R pi, you need to figure out C pi. So the way to do that is you know IC, so first thing you figure out is GM. Very simple, you have IC, and KT over Q is 26 millivolts, so you get 39 millisiemens. Okay? The second thing is R pi, and R pi is just beta over GM. You are given beta, you have found out GM, you can find out your resistance. The last thing is C pi, which is the storage time capacitance in this case. You look at tau F GM, you are given tau F, you know GM, you figure out the C pi. And then the depletion capacitance, you know, this is just epsilon over WD. So you can just figure that out. Okay? So you once you have set or specified your DC biasing conditions, you can figure out the small signal model. Yes? That's strictly speaking, this is an approximation. Right, yeah. So, but if your signal is very small, then it works out, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, does everybody understand that question? That is this strictly true or is an approximation? Right, so this is like saying this, that let's say you have a curve like this, and we are trying to find out, let's say this is IC, this is VBE. So if I just find out the slope here, right? Question is, does this give me, if I find out the slope, let's say at this point, can this give me the slope all over this region or not? Okay? So it will be the same slope all over this region, even from this point, if this region is very small. So if your VBE is very, very small, and your IC over VBE is relatively smooth, this will work out. Otherwise, it will be an approximation. Any other question? Okay. So let me just finish by saying that the small signal model, what we are trying to do is to find out the response to a small AC signal, and our input voltage is basically VBE, so we are finding out how the other parameters behave as a function of VBE. So there are only two things to find out. One is collector current and base current. That's what we found out. And the last thing was the storage time, because it's a time-dependent effect, and that gave us a capacitance. So let's stop there. And the next class, we will talk about how to look at cutoff frequency from this analysis.